and welcome back. We're here for another episode of Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Matt Brender.
We are taking on a little bit different topic this week because we came up with a great title and we thought it would make a good podcast around it. We are going to be talking about how to socially train your PR professional. Now, if you wonder, does that sound like an animal training manual? Well, lean in carefully, all of the social media types. Sometimes it feels like that. So our PR brethren and sistren, you might want to cover your ears a little bit, or you might want to listen in. So we thought it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm hoping they really want to listen in. We'll put down the newspaper and have a very frank conversation and just, you know, hope there isn't too much spillage.
Yeah, and do we want to apologize in advance just for all these slurs we're making?
I was always told that if you're apologizing in advance, you're actually just insulting people twice.
Well, I don't want to be a dick, but
there's a good article about that on Google Plus. But yes, I don't either. But I do think there's some tension there. Don't you guys think? Should we do a little roll call?
I mean, without a doubt, the reason that this is a topic worth bringing up and the reason we're framing it the way we are is that we've all run into it a moment or two at least where there's this seeming overlap, this complement, possible synergy, but really it just turns into a complete lost in translation of two people going after the same audience from two seemingly dichotomous ends of an idea, and they're PR professionals versus social media community manager types.
Yep. So here we go. I'm gonna kick it off of what I would say to a PR person if they were here.
Okay, go.
All right. So I'm not 13 and I don't tweet for a living. So number one misconception I think around social media is that you must be underage, like just the age of Instagram apparently. And that all you do is write 140 characters at a time, just as it comes to you. And I think my pushback on that is that there is an incredible amount of art and strategy. And it's not to say some self-aggrandizing, I do this perfectly, I do this well. You know, I consider everything a journey. You always train, you learn, you listen. But it isn't something that I just started doing yesterday. And it's not something where it's only one platform and just flipping off comments about bacon. That might be a public image, but that is what it is in some ways, a public image, and doesn't necessarily talk about some of the things we talk about here, which are pretty strategic, and they're a new form of communication. And it isn't as simple as a single platform or messaging or people. I always look at social as kind of all three of those things. So you've got the content, you've got the platforms, and you've got the people that create it and co-create it. And I think when you have good synergy between all three of those elements, you come up with some pretty magical and really fun, engaging marketing opportunities. And I think if you focus too much, dial it up on any one of those three things, you kind of move into a different segment of marketing, which is, I think, important and good, but it isn't, at the very least, it's not simple. It isn't as, when we make it look easy, we're doing a great job, I think.
Gotcha.
What do you guys think?
Well, so Amy, it seems like there's two separate issues that are kind of intertwined that you're talking about. One is the gravitas issue, is that it seems like some of the times we do silly stuff. We tweet about bacon. We throw parties. I joke about how my job is to, you know, go from party to party at VMworld. And maybe that's our own fault in that in the business context, when you're sitting around a conference room and everybody's wearing slacks, normally you're not talking about you know, how much fun you're having or whatever. I don't know. Maybe that's our own fault for not speaking the right business code. But then the other piece is, well, let's take that first. Am I off track there? Or
no, I love the gravitas is a great word for it, and especially as we're how to socially train your PR professional, that I think maybe in its early days, social was exactly that, purely social. But I had a great conversation just a couple days ago where somebody was pitching a particular product and they said, you know, number one misconception is people say Facebook is just for personal. It's not for professional or enterprise use. And they saw that as one of the fastest growing and most highly engaging platforms because people are on it all the time. It's a channel that's always open and available to you. And just things like that. There is, you know, yes, I know that sounds, maybe that in itself sounds funny. And I never want to take myself too seriously, but it's real.
Maybe it's both sides, right? The business people need to take the sticks out of their behinds, number one. They might sell more. And number two,
more sticks at least.
Yeah, well, the way that social media grew up with this kind of these gurus who like maintain these personal brands in the consumer space didn't so much happen in our space, but the public perception of these gurus, I think, as and some of what they were preaching was not very connected to business value. There was a lot of let's all get up and hug. And not a lot of let's all connect this back to our business operation.
Yeah, I don't know.
And Brandon, do you get that?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And I like that you started out by being self-reflective. I think, especially when we're being so confrontational, kind of for the fun of it, it's good to take a step back and be like, all right, well, what are we bringing to the table? And honestly, what are we not bringing to the table? And one of the things that are probably the balls in the air that we drop the most often as social media professionals, or at least where professionals in this whatever world, whatever org chart we're in that utilize social media, we can often use our own language as opposed to translating to the business language that has proven value. Now, that's not an easy process, but it's one of those things where it is our responsibility that we take that next step of proving that it's worth investment, both time and money.
And I say I have learned so much from both of you in this because, Matt, you speak metrics fluently, and John, you do an excellent job of speaking program. And we've talked about both of those things on here. And so I agree that in how to socially train your PR professional, it's very helpful if you speak in their language. Don't speak cat to dogs and vice versa. And meet people halfway. That has certainly improved the conversation. And trying to even learn a little bit of that PR speak so that you can put it in terms that I think are meaningful and people understand. So I hear a lot about narrative and storytelling now. Those are big terms of art, I think. You know, what's the story? And to understand that in social, we can create that same sort of story. The scary part, I think, for PR folks, and again, speaking out of school, is that it's not always fully written when we get our hands on it. That a lot of what we do is improv. And that can maybe seem very freewheeling, but it actually has a point. Leaving that space to create means a more powerful and on-point story, whereas I can understand the joy of creating a story and sort of driving it through channels.
Sure.
Also, we're letting people tell it in their own words often, which, again, is a release of control. That's been a theme of kind of the social media conversation for years. When I'm working with a product team, often the conversation goes back to bring us in at the beginning. So for PR, you know, and again, I'm not a PR person, and you guys aren't either, I guess. But you know, often we tend to reduce what they do to just placing stories or pitching reporters. But they do a lot more than that too. I think sometimes it's if you look at a simplistic version of what they do, which would be, oh, I call up a reporter and I pitch him on a story and he interviews my VP. To what we're trying to, with the simplistic version of we do, that fits with a simple version of what we do. Oh, I did the story. It's in the magazine. Now tweet about it.
Right.
So, yes.
Yeah. So we're both creating straw men attacks against each other where we're making this very silly version of us. But since we are talking from some basis of experience, and we all know we're speaking with some ignorance to what a PR professional has to do in enterprise IT today, I say we just keep pushing through and we'll get the right people on here in the future to correct us if need be. So back,
there we go. If we're wrong. So Matt, how do you socially train your PR professionals? What do you have to say?
Oh, really? It comes down, and I see it around events mostly. It comes down to, this is how I sum it up, that your people are not better than my people. Now, I can't say that verbatim, but in the context of a given initiative or a given narrative, since we're supposed to be using the same language, in a narrative, when you have somebody when you have two people on hand and only one of them's going to get a free ticket to EMC World, for example, if you're looking at an influential blogger and you're looking at somebody with credentials from, I don't know, the Huffington Post, I mean, that's a pretty big deal probably, but even somewhere less big deal, Tech Target, no offense to them, but Huffington Post would outrank them. So Tech Target versus an influential blogger that is across multiple platforms and is well respected in a given paradigm. Without a doubt, the person with Tech Target is going to get it from the PR, going to get all the attention from the PR person, no matter how much advocacy, or without putting a lot of advocacy into that individual blogger and pitching that no, in this given topic, this person is respected. If we want to influence a conversation around cloud or security, we really need them, not somebody else that seems like they have better credentials. So just because somebody isn't working for a given company doesn't mean that they're not as valuable to telling that story to the target audience. And that takes a lot of – it's not a cleaver activity. It really is an exercise in scalpel and going in to specific targets with specific people. But I see that as part of my job in social, is to know those people and to help connect them, which is honestly one of the confusing overlaps, that it's not just – it's not just using those platforms. It's knowing people in a way that's normally been AR, PR world.
Hmm. Well, and sort of a secondary point there, I try to frame what I do as influencer marketing, which I do think we had Greg Nierman on recently talking about tech evangelism and what that role looks like. My prediction is it won't be that long before we see more and more companies, enterprise companies with influence marketing departments. In some ways, it's what big data has led us to, I think, in terms of knowing more about people and being able to act on it, action that. So I think that's the trend we see coming. I think that's going to be a natural outgrowth of social. So, I totally agree with you. I think there are some – I always like to say if it's not the person that signs the deal, we often know the people who can wreck the deal. And that's incredibly – that's a powerful statement. It sort of gets people's attention. But on the flip side, I have found that you have to be careful how to position it because you don't want to get in competition with, AR, IR, PR. So I often describe it as, just for simplicity, and we talk about speaking the same language, not IR, AR, PR, everybody else. And that seems to calm people. It still does position it in this a little bit of a hierarchical way that I'm not comfortable with. Because I agree with you, Matt. Like,
We get the – I sometimes joke that I'm not going to insult anybody here. But,
go for it. We're all taking a turn.
We're all excited.
My job is to deal with the wolf children, the children that were raised by
the
wolves.
Feral
children that they deal with the regular people who have regular jobs. I deal with everybody else.
And you know how I see that, John? I see that as they deal with the wolves, like the people that only do thing for profit, and we do it and we work with people that do this because it's exciting, it's interesting, they're passionate about it.
Well, if you aren't cynical, I suppose that's the way to look at it.
I just like that every time John says he doesn't want to insult anybody and then roundly insults them. It's my favorite
That's
part.
Two times so far tonight.
Bless your heart.
But we can't be – okay, so your people are not better – so your training, when you're going to train, you're socially trained, your PR professional, your people are not better than my people. There's a flip side to that too, which is that there comes a point – there comes a point when the PR professional is holding onto their desk with white knuckles because their people have not delivered, and they haven't gotten the press and the analysts and the folks to tell the story, to sing the chorus the way they want them to. And then they come to the social media side, and then they think that we don't work with feral children. We work with leprechauns, and that we're magic. And they're like,
so unicorns.
Can your leprechauns please show up with the gold?
Can you go make them tweet and blog this?
Yeah, and it's like, we're good, but I'm not that good. So you can't overpromise that your people are better, than better than the journalists either.
Oh, absolutely. Like, well, just logically stating it, it said your people are not better than mine. That certainly does not imply the flip that my people are better than yours. There are overlapping circles in the way we've drawn on Geek Whispers dozens of times now. And there's a nice middle spot of influencers that are fitting across both. But when you don't hit that, that doesn't mean that your half of the other circle and my half of the other circle are, you know, very easy to split, saying that yours are all the important ones and mine are all the unimportant ones. Because like we've been saying, like, when you're telling a narrative, you don't just shout it once and then drop the mic and walk away. You're trying to sustain enthusiasm and engagement, especially with these huge ideas like big data, cloud, trust. I mean, these aren't just they make sense and then you're done. You need a long tail on that engagement. And I would say when it comes to the energy that people are willing to put in, you're going to get more kinetic energy out of the community than you will out of people that are doing it for hire. So you can have a longer tail.
Totally agree with that. I think it ties back into, you know, my initial training session, which would be, you know, there is gravitas, there is strategy, but flip side both ways. I think social can move faster, be more nimble, et cetera, but it still takes time. You know, execution takes time. And it isn't all unicorns and leprechauns and bacon and magic. That, you know, we have to have some time and some lead, you know, honestly, and sometimes some funding. That's the other thing I'd like to share with the PR team and the larger budgeting folks is, you know, PR is not free, or rather social is not free. We just make it look like that much fun. I think that was like, I've used all these one-liners like this week alone.
But social, yes. Like, you can really get a lot for less money. So I think it's seen as like, oh, it's
high value.
High, yeah.
But let's take, you know, we've had, you know, another guest on, and in podcast time, who knows what we'll get out in what order, but we'll reference the Ethan Banks podcast where we talk about valuation of social brand. And I think in the same way, if we devalue and always say social is free, then we are putting ourselves as an entire organization and, you know, genre in trouble. On the flip side there, again, there's always two sides. And I know, John, I'd like to get you started on this one. Again, if we talk about pure social agencies, then you get into, you know, extreme high cost for every character tweeted. So
I don't think I should get started on agencies because I've already insulted a lot of people.
Yeah, and despite our best efforts, we're all going to know people and need people in agencies. So let's move right along. John, what is your training tip for your fellow social mediaite who's trying to train their PR professional?
I know plenty of good agencies too, but in any case, my lesson for the trainee is don't pitch, make friends. And I came up with this one because as I've talked with folks in the PR field, and they start to get – and here's a common scenario is they start to get it, or they know they need to get it. And so they get on Twitter, and they seem to think that what they're supposed to do on Twitter is post headlines and links to our blogs and our press releases. And actually, to insult even more people, I see this with recruiters too. The recruiters are told, get on Twitter, become social, you know, and you will suddenly magically find these truffles out there.
... Profit.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you're not a technical person and you're trying to recruit technical people, if you're really good at it, sure, you tweet all this information and you put it's fish food and people the fish will come and eat. Boy, I'm mixing metaphors. People are both truffles and fish, but
they're consuming themselves.
but if you only go out and tweet a couple of headlines about your own company once a week, you know it's not going to work. And if you don't listen to anybody or talk to anybody, you know, it's like they really have the kind of the wrong conception of what's going on Twitter.
You know what? And John, that really resonates with me. we talked about this a couple different times offline, that I've been sticking to this metaphor, and I'm going to keep sticking to it until it breaks. But when I talk to people about how to use Twitter in particular as a platform, but really this goes for all of the social media platforms, that when you show up on there, they're not a microphone. It's not a megaphone even. It's a cocktail party. So you're not walking up. You're not standing on a soapbox. You don't have a big microphone. You're not pitching this idea, and everyone's just going to listen because you're talking. No one probably cares, actually, at first. You first have to actually make the rounds. You have to see who's there, why they're there. You know, be a little casual, stay professional at the same time. You have to really treat it like you're socializing outside of work with your company, with peers. Mm-hmm. And utilize that opportunity the same way you do in real life. And I generally see a click in people's heads when I say that. They're like, oh, okay, so I'm the kind of person at a cocktail party that just wants to meet one or two people and have like a nice intimate conversation and get to know them. I'm like, all right, cool, do that on Twitter. If you're the kind of person that you're the social butterfly and you're going to pop around and meet dozens of people and like know all of them casually, do that too. Whatever works for you, just do right. Something that feels real.
I think if people haven't listened to our episode 8, where we talk about how to get started on Twitter, I think we kind of went – I thought there was some brilliant insight in that one, and other people have thought that as well. So if you haven't listened to episode 8 and you're interested in the cocktail party metaphor of Twitter and how to kind of slide up to people on the side and start – insert yourself into their conversation in a nice way, because that's what humans do. I mean, not in a sleazy way. Listen to episode 8. Well, I think that's absolutely right, Matt. And let's flip that on its head in terms of the positive way of saying this, which is make friends, don't pitch people. What I find odd is that a lot of PR people like to work in the background, they like to work behind the scenes, but they do pride themselves on their relationships with different journalists and influencers, but they don't actually talk to them very often, they don't see them very often, and sometimes they don't talk to them except when they're pitching something. At least that's, again, my stereotype. When, in fact, I see the top tech journalists on Twitter every day because they're in my feed and I talk to them. So in some cases, I see them sourcing stories. I see them reacting to other headlines. I see them talking about the projects they're working on, the stories they're working on. I see them right after they've published, and I get a sense of how they feel about a story. Like, are they excited about it? Or do they think it's going to really, you know, cause a shitstorm? So in some ways, there are some journalists that I feel like I probably know better than are my colleagues who work with them in terms of helping them write stories. So that's the whole thing. Flip it on its head. One of the benefits of being on Twitter and Chuck Hollis, our episode with Chuck Hollis, which was a back a ways. I don't know which episode it was. He I thought was pretty brilliant. In that he pointed out he's not on Twitter or he's not on social because he wants to be or because it's some sort of duty. He really sees value in it. So I think unless for our hypothetical PR professional that we are training here, you know, it's not going to gel unless they find value in it. And the way to one of the ways that a PR professional can find value in Twitter is kind of go over and socialize with the people you're supposed to be working with.
Well, a couple things out of that, John. There are some incredibly talented PR folks who are socially savvy, and I've had the pleasure to work with. And it is like unicorns. Whenever you speak the same language and have respect for the other side, the combination is incredibly powerful in the enterprise. So if we talk about where things should sit or how it should be organized, just something for the listeners to keep in mind. I think when you do get that strong connection and people who respect and fully try to understand and reach over the aisle, if you will, you get something pretty powerful because you can learn a lot from someone who can speak a little bit of your language and you try to speak a little bit of theirs.
Yes, having advocates across any sort of aisles built in maybe pretty much falsely these days. I mean, separating these influencer marketers that are shape-shifting PR people into that and separating them from the social media marketers, there's really opportunity to connect there. And when individuals span that gap, it's just extremely powerful.
And the other point in terms of how social moves differently than PR, I'm going to go ahead and use the word fraternizing. I think that people would actively frown upon. There is still some invisible journalistic wall, even if people have relationships in the PR field. And of course, lots of people do. And that's how stories get pitched effectively. I think that what we do is so hands-on. It's hard for me to envision a world where you were working so closely with the people that you want to influence. It's a different medium. It's a different skill set, and I'm sure it does look odd from the outside. That why do you have a bacon themed party every year, you know? But suddenly, there's a reason for it. You know, 2 years later, then people kind of have this aha moment. That's actually, you know, a conversation I've had this week as well. Of, in case you wonder what I've been doing these last couple years, now when you need those leprechauns to appear, that's when we call on them.
Right.
And it really is the make friends, don't pitch, because I think pitching ends up, you only get so many pitches, well, so to speak.
It's also kind of adversarial. It's more like when Ralph the wolf and Sam the sheepdog in the cartoon go and clock in. Yeah. And, yes. then they fight all day, and then they clock out and they go home and they're friends. Some of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Since we're just playing with so many mixed metaphors tonight, I think I spoke before about the kinetic energy inside the community. And I'd really add that the investment you make in the individuals when you're not pitching all the time and you're actively trying to make friends and you're treating the room like a cocktail party, it really adds a lot of potential energy to future projects, that the bacon meetups, to these community meetups, to going to user groups, these are all opportunities for you to build up potential energy that you then release in your next narrative cycle. That's a big marketing pitch. And then you have to charge up again, just like in the world of physics. You need to have the energy to spend, and you only get that by investing back in people.
Hey, I want to clarify something. I want to take back the joke I just made, virtually take it back. So I was talking about, I'm friends with everybody. I don't see anybody I interact with in an adversarial way. The sheepdog and the wolf cartoon thing, I think sometimes, again, I've heard some PR professionals almost speak of their relationship with journalists in an adversarial way. So I was speaking more to that than the community side. But we do commit acts of marketing here and there in our field.
We do.
I love it. Not when you use random. That phrase.
And yeah. On purpose, even. And I was actually, one of the comments from the podcast with Ethan Banks that hopefully will be published by now, he made an offhand comment like he listens to this podcast and it either makes him queasy or it scares him. I forget the word he used.
Queasy. A little queasy sometimes to hear about the sausage making.
And yeah. That disturbed me because part of social is doing all this in the open, right? Part of social is being transparent. And down back into our lives, right? I know what you did this weekend, Amy. I saw the pictures on Facebook. And I know what people in our community have did this weekend too, or are doing this weekend. And so they hopefully know what I do for a living and for fun. I don't know. Is there a piece of this training for the PR professional? Is it about accepting that you're going to do some of the things in the open with transparency? Or I don't know. Can you speak to what Ethan's queasiness? I felt bad that we made him queasy.
Well, I think that I actually love this point, and I realize you just gave me a light bulb moment of, I understand I have this compulsion to do that sort of shine the light, throw the curtains back thing, which can include saying, well, you should, in full disclosure, I have this relationship with this person, or I have this relationship with that person. And it's not meant to beat people over the head with, these are any number of relationships that I have. I'm trying to be honest and forthcoming so they don't feel caught off guard when that person comes up and says hello, or, you know, it comes out later. It's that put it in the front. And it's interesting. I can see how what we do, again, it's so unusual in that we are part and parcel of the community and not not above and at this different level. And adversarial might be too strong, but I think there is that kind of journalistic wall or some other walls within other groups. And not that people don't hang out, but fraternization has a pejorative connotation to it. It's a negative. It's seen as unfair, somehow unfair advantage. And I would say there are times that even people look a little bit at social or Twitter as unfair advantage. I've been called out. It's funny. It's almost come that far of like, well, that's cheating, isn't it? If you know this person or if you have that relationship. I don't know if that's part of it or if none of us like, and again, I use influencer marketing, that term, very carefully, and I try to be very honest about who I am and what I'm doing. And I genuinely like everybody that I'm working with. It's not that I try to come present this false front, because I think it is a very delicate thing. No one wants to feel manipulated. No one wants to be suckered into something. Nobody wants to look back and reflect and go, oh, that wasn't what I thought it was. And I don't know. I'd be curious. It'd be fun to ask Ethan that question and sort of dive into it a little bit more. But I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah, it's like, can you sincerely enjoy something you're also getting paid to do? And I know it's hard to talk to him when he's not here, but I think Ethan would say when he gets opportunities to go do packet pushers at a conference with a bunch of good people and they're getting paid to go out there and produce collateral for that conference, that's still something he loves. And that's really what I got out of that conversation, that you can be paid and you can still love what you do. And that hopefully relieves some of the nausea that some might feel as they hear us making sausage on Geek Whisperers. Because the question that has to approach your mind when you hear that, like, all this conversation on how we're actually measured and how we're targeting certain groups that focus on certain subjects is, do these people actually care about me, or am I actually just a pawn in this game? And that's a horrible feeling, but I think I know we can say with sincerity and certainty that we truly like the people we interact with, and it just happens to be mutually beneficial to us, so we keep doing it.
Well, and I think it goes back to that, if we think about that as a role, that sort of tech evangelist role, and I thought Greg Nierman did a great job sort of discussing, you know, how he can slice and dice his personal brand from what he does for a living, and how, back to the Chuck Hollis overlapping circles, that we need, you need to, it has to be authentic. I mean, that's the word that always comes up. You have to be authentic. I think that people who aren't get found out quickly. That is part of what we do. Again, how to socially train your PR person. I think that authenticity and credibility is our stock in trade. And I think that is not that that's not true in publicity and PR, but we've become such a cynical world. People don't believe a press release. They just don't. They want to hear critical analysis of it. We've moved to that second tier, I think, as a culture. And that's really the layer two we live in, is we deal with the critically analytic people. And so I think we're very sensitive and sensitized to it, because we would get called out if we were seen as that kind of manipulator, or your reputation matters. How you engage with the community matters. And that maybe isn't the same in a world where it's more about content marketing, and it's about how effectively do you get a certain type of content out to X number of people. Maybe it's a different thing.
Maybe that's the lesson in there, Amy, that it's not just that you get to the ends. It's also the means by which you get there. And people are paying attention to how you interact with them and the level of sincerity in which you interact with them. And I'm by no means saying that PR people don't know how to do it. I mean, they've been doing it better or at least longer than I have. But it's just something it's even more microscopically noticeable today. And I think the expectation, back to John's point before, and correct me if you disagree, but I think the expectation is that you're a little bit more engaged on a daily basis, whether you're on call for work or mm-hmm. you're offline and hanging out at the beach.
Yeah, that's probably something where we need to figure out a better system. I don't know how to do it, though, because I think all three of us probably are attached at the hip to a device most of our waking hours. And that's you know, that's not. I think we can. I think we can. I don't think it's necessary. I definitely think probably we do it because we like it. And but the funny thing is, you can walk away. But there is a level of engagement necessary. There's part of a cadence, a rhythm of the cocktail party or the coffee shop that. Maybe this wraps back around to Amy's first point. It makes it seem like we're doing this all-consuming thing that a normal business person can't or do or doesn't have time to do. Do people think this is not for me because I'm going to have to be staring at a Twitter screen for 20 hours a day? I don't know.
Or your point, John, of don't pitch, make friends. It's funny how all these things end up tying together. And maybe it speaks to the fact that you know, if we did Myers-Briggs on ourselves or something, it would be kind of interesting. Like, what is the personality type that's drawn to this? You know, one, if you're in J school, you kind of veer one way or the other, PR versus marketing, and then subdivisions from there. And why, you know, which personality goes which way? And I used to joke, I've got a lot of friends in PR actually, and their first instinct is to pick up the phone. And you know, predating Twitter and texting, my first instinct was to send an email. Mm. And they say, you know, marketing tends to draw introverts over extroverts. PR tends to draw extroverts, actually. So it's, you know, it could be something very deeply psychological. I think it's kind of interesting.
Mm. And that's just based on the channel you're using. I mean, that's just based on we have a different set of tools now. So we are, turns out maybe introvert versus extrovert. We're extroverts in an introverted channel. Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, as you know, since we're talking so much science, I'm like, where are the studies that are supporting these premises?
Well, these are all anecdotal, and I'll look to you, Matt, to do some research and back them up.
Okay.
Because I know that your people are not better than my people.
Yeah. My people are definitely better than your people. No. Are you kidding? They're the same people.
Well, it actually, to your point, Matt, you know, maybe it's a matter of your people are quieter or they talk differently or they think differently.
Yes.
Because one of the big differences, I think, between PR and social is we are brought in to do this magical instant thing. But one of the things I try to pitch when I'm there is that we also have the potential to have a much longer lifespan. So what we do isn't as ephemeral. A tweet can be very much so. But some of the content we create, the relationships we build are quite long lasting. And they, if you're sending out a press release, it hits the wire. It makes you want it to make as big a splash as possible to send the waves out as far as possible. Boy, we all have got good metaphors tonight. No metaphor left behind. But with us, I think it's we send 1,000 pebbles with an effort to keep the ripples in motion constantly. So the waves are smaller, but they're constant. And eventually we've got a lot more ammunition and it lasts longer. It's the glue between these big bang events. And that seems to help as well, actually, when I have that conversation, because I think there's plenty of a need for both. You need these big bang, big splash, but that constancy, that sort of quieter, maybe more thoughtful conversation that fewer people are listening to, but more people engage with, that's got a place in marketing as well.
No, and I have one more thing that comes to mind, and I hope this actually changes factually going forward. But when it comes to the community right now, if somebody in any marketing org or PR org comes and is like, I need to get the attention of a C-level person right away, can you go enable the social forces? I've actually found that there's less of an audience in the circle I sit within that is interested in that C-level discussion or are C-level people. But on the other end, if the message, if the it really is technology first, and we're talking about true blue data infrastructure, virtualization, storage, networking, compute, if you're getting to that granularity, I'm absolutely, my people are going to be better than the ones you're going to go to first because they're the ones that do it. Like, and I think that might be part of the polling. Well, I almost want to say polling error, but just the people we surround ourselves by, or at least I surround myself by, are more hands-on right now in the Twitter sphere John, do you see that, or do you think that it's actually more of just the group that I roll with?
No. You're right. Our community, the community that we built is a practitioner community, or consulting community. There is a lot of thought leadership going on, but it's bottom up. I am reminded of the book, The New Kingmakers, from the Red Monk guys. It's about developers, but it's talking about how the forces of the internet, social, open source, SaaS, all the things that let people be agile and iterate rapidly and find out information quickly are actually making the bottom-up people more important than the top-down people, because they're the people that can actually – so the CIO reads 300 words about cloud on his in-flight magazine, but he has to go to his architect and say, what's real? What vendors are real? What can I actually do with this? And so in a lot of ways, they're making the argument that, one, that's true. We see more on the social side. It tends to be more of a technical conversation. But despite that, those people are gathering an increasing amount of influence in the purchasing decision. Now, that may be right. That may be not. I mean, if you talk to the VCE guys who sell an integrated infrastructure that, you know, it's like a car with the hood welded shut, that turns a lot of IT practitioners off, but they say the CIO likes it. So it kind of depends on your solution and where you're coming from. But I think there is a cohort of savvy people who are bringing IT to the next place it's going, and they are not necessarily the CIOs currently.
Yeah. And actually, looking back, one of my favorite charts out there, and we'll definitely link to it in the blog post here, is the 2012 Edelman Trust Barometer. They put out an infographic based off the stats. And the things that really stand out to me is that the credibility scale has dramatically changed from people who are paid experts or CEO level people are trusted significantly less. And the people that are getting the trust that they used to have are these two categories: regular employees and a person like yourself. People jumped over 20% higher towards people like themselves for decision making than they do while government officials, regulators, CEO level people are dropping by 10 to 15%. And I love, because the analytics really help the argument when discussing why social is powerful. And we're dealing with more people that are more like each other and themselves than we used to. We're empowering them through social. They're empowering each other. And we're hitting that audience every time. And I guess that goes back to my point initially, that these people are possibly the right people for what you're after, but just your high value ones that you're after and spending a lot of money to pursue, they might not be the best choice in a given situation.
Which kind of all comes back around as we lock this down and close out, that there's art to it, but there's science. There's actual thoughtful marketing that goes behind all of this, including buying centers or target audience and all the things that marketeers traditionally do. We just maybe have a little more fun doing it and use a different set of tools.
Well, Amy, did we successfully come up with a training program here in this podcast?
I think that if all those PR professionals will take 140 characters and call us in the morning,
we'll give them a grade.
Exactly.
And I really do hope that somebody gives us a rabble-rousing after this, that somebody in the PR world can come on the next show and talk to us about how they would teach us.
I agree. Challenge, the gauntlet has been tossed, and I think we've alienated or annoyed enough people that somebody, surely, out there has got their dukes up. So we love you all, we swear. Well, thanks, John. Thanks, Matt. This was actually really fabulous conversation. I learned a lot. It's another one of those podcasts where I find myself forgetting I'm on the podcast and listening to it.
Yeah, I want to actually go make some notes. I think there's some stuff we invented here that I liked.
Yeah, yeah. Our Geek Whisperers book is half written just from the most recent shows.
Let's not hurt ourselves too much, pat ourselves on the back.
No, I was going to say, for any listeners who think this is ridiculous, you should know that we're also insulting each other on Twitter while we do this in real time. Thanks for listening. And we're out of here.
See you next week.
Oh, God, I love this shit.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.